please join me in welcoming, for his very first performance at the West End Cultural Center, Mr. Leo Kottke.
Thank you. It's probably time I said something. I try to speak actually long before this, but I used to do that under what turned out to be the false impression that it didn't matter what I said. See, I know that, and maybe you've already suspected that I don't have anything to say at this point in the set. But over the years, it became apparent to me that you have to say something. So I just started talking, as I have tonight, a few years ago, and just hoped for the best. And the thing that made this seem real feasible to me was that I knew how awful it gets if you don't say anything at all. There's a real tension that grows in the crowd, and it becomes hostility within a very short while. Some people seem to be able to get away without saying a word, but I'm not one of them, and not many people are one of them. So I began to speak, knowing that no matter what happened, even if I didn't think of anything to say after talking for 10 minutes, that it was really the height of professionalism on my part. But then I had a real powerfully sinking feeling one night when I realized that of all the people in this room, let's say, I'm the only one who knows how bad it gets if I don't say anything. So the suffering you're undergoing means only that to you right now. That, the question in your mind is, why is he doing this? Is there a point to this? And the point is, you need to know that if I hadn't said anything, you'd feel much worse than you do right now. This is called Oddball. It was originally called Jane's Nut Bread, but that sounded ridiculous to me. For some reason, Oddball didn't sound ridiculous to me. Thank you.
You're listening to Hot Ticket on CBC. This is Leo Kottke, recorded live at Winnipeg's West End Cultural Centre.
I visited Faulkner's grave recently in Oxford, Mississippi, and it was not all it has cracked up to be. I've heard and thought myself that such a thing would be, you know, especially moving or, you know, at the least entertaining. But if you've read any of Faulkner's books, you expect more from him than your usual corpse, but nothing happened. I was telling my friend T-Bone Burnett about this visit and my disappointment, and he said, well, he's dead, you know. And it only made it apparent that T-Bone missed the point entirely. Says maybe what you do. I've been wondering where you've been. Now and then I think about you and me. No use fighting about things we can't recall, 'cause it don't matter now at all. Oh, just come on in. Baby, we'll laugh and sing, and we'll make love. Let the telephone ring. Ring, ring, doorbell ring, come on in. I got Mel Blanc on the radio. I'm glad you came around. I've been feeling down, talking to Tony and Mario. You know they'd make good conversation. Consolation, 'cause I got love. Baby, I'll give you something. If somebody comes, let the doorbell ring.
Let's cut back on that reverb out there in the room. Most of the people that I know who play started playing at a time in their life when they'd lost something. And I think a lot of music is generated, a lot of imagination or products of imagination are generated out of a sense of loss. And for me, there was nothing better than losing whatever town I'd been living in for the last 2 years. I loved to leave. And the biggest thrill I could think of was getting out of town. And even better, out of state, from the time I was, you know, five or six, as far back as I can recall. And I was always listening to something, I was always playing something, and I took that with me. So I don't know if it relates to moving around, but it sure does relate to whatever I have for home. Music for me is a sense of place. It's what I hear in other people's music, and it's what I look for in mine.
Down, you'll find that it's stranger than known. Signs in the street that say where you're going are somewhere just being there. Among those afraid of losing their ground, rain gray town, known for its sound, in places small faces unbound. Places, small faces unbound.
You're listening to Leo Kottke, recorded live at Winnipeg's West End Cultural Center. This is Hot Ticket on CBC.
Well, I'll do that. That'll happen. I'm a pig for that song. It's one of the great guitar tunes. I also love this thing. This is the one that I stole most of what I know about right-hand technique from, and it was written by Pete Seeger, who has recorded some amazing instrumental stuff, and it's some of the least recognized of the things that he's done. He has a way with rhythm that is highly original and infectious and unbeatable, and I've never heard anybody do stuff like this. I asked him if he was going to do any more of it, and he basically said no. This was when I met him in New York. He was doing a benefit for some vanishing country somewhere, and I went up to him afterward, and I said, hello, you know. He said, where's your guitar? I don't have my guitar, Pete. And I called him Pete, you know. And he said, well, you should have brought your guitar. You know, that's what this is about. Well, so I stood there a little while longer, still hoping that I could just talk to him for a couple of minutes. As I stood there, a woman, was kind of stammering, I guess, but as I stammered, a woman approached him. A lot of people approached him. Everybody thinks that they know him, and that's fine with him, evidently, except that he looks out over your head when you talk to him. He's about 7'5", I think, and he has a habit of looking out at the horizon. Of course, there is none in Manhattan, but he's looking out there as if there is one, and it's coming toward him. You can see it, and it's kind of charming in a way, but it's also kind of disconcerting. You don't know who you're talking to, and but every now and then he'll look down and achieve eye contact, and then he's had enough, I think, and looks back. So among the people who approached him was a woman with a Spanish accent who said, "Pete, I'm about to get married," and he said, "Wonderful, the most beautiful love song ever written is," and he rattled off this title, and he grabbed her by the shoulders, and he started to sing it to her. And she was, you know, at first, she was deeply moved. But by about the 55th verse, she was beginning to get irritated, and there was no way out for her. You know, she had to stand there while Pete stared off over her head at the horizon and listen to this song. And he sang every verse. It had as many verses as La Cucaracha, and I don't know how many there are to that, but there's tons. And he kept a hold of her shoulders. She didn't have an option. So he finished it, and he didn't, no editorializing on his part. I think he knew she'd had enough, and she went on to her marriage. But, you know, I asked Pete at that point, more or less, for his phone number so I could call him up, say hello, whatever. You know, I greatly admire Pete and his playing. And he, instead of giving me his phone number, he drew me a map to his house. It's perfect, you know, it's just absolutely perfect. I wrote him a letter once, and he mailed me back a leaf. What a guy. So he wrote this song. He's recorded it two or three times. Once with a whistle, and that, where he whistles a harmony. I tried to whistle the harmony once in concert, and my pucker so repelled the crowd that I've never done it again. I tried out for the flute, parenthetically. I'm about done. I'll be done with this in a second, then I'll play. People have come up to me after shows and they've said, "Leo, we came to hear you play." Well, I don't care. This is called Living in the Country. It was written by the immortal Pete Seeger. thank you for coming out on a slippery night. I know that right out here on the street, four cars were rammed into by, I hope one of yours isn't among them. I don't know how many of you know that. Four cars parked along, I think, I forget which way I'm facing, over there. Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.